Hey, what's up, everybody? Welcome back to my new episode with Petteri Koponen from Finland. And we talked about his career as a player. We talked about his draft and stash time, the expectation he lived with or didn't live with, the adjustment from player to coach, the time in New Zealand, the time apart from his family, and many more things in regards to coaching and playing. I think it's a very beautiful episode where he shows his private side in terms of life apart from the family. At the end of the episode, we also went to the pro ball section, obviously, and analyzed some things. And please subscribe if you like this episode. Please share with people who may like it, may enjoy it. Let's spread the word, and I'm glad you're here. Thanks for being here, and see you soon. Bye. All right, Petteri, welcome to my podcast world.
Thank you. It's an honor. You know, I've been listening to this podcast, watching, you know, you had great guests, and so it's an honor to be here.
Thank you. Thank you. Now, I love this part because it's also, it helped me, I didn't expect it, but it helped me to connect with new people also, you know, so there was a side effect that I didn't expect, but at the same time, I'm ambitious for it to grow also more and faster and better, and, you know, like this is like the competitive nature comes out sometimes, but I don't overwhelm myself with the expectations aspect.
No, but I think you are doing a great job. So I've been enjoying, and I think there are many, many others who feel the same way. So
Thank you. Good
job so far.
Thank you. Thank you. So I have back issues. You have hip issues. Tell me about you're on the couch after surgery. Tell me what was the procedure?
Yeah, I had my second hip done. I actually got my second artificial hip. So it's kind of pretty harsh. I'm 36 years old, and you know, now I got two fake hips, and but overall I feel great. I think the surgery went really, really well, and now it's, you know, time to rest a little bit and then do the recovery part good, and then but you know, I got the experience with my left one 2 years ago, so basically it's like a new leg right now, and I feel I could play basketball again, and now just, you know, I'm really excited to see, you know, after the recovery and then rehab and everything, how the right one is, and you know, to really be able to move also without the pain again, because yeah, it's been many years, you know, kind of frustrating. Whatever you do, the pain is there.
I feel the same pain with my back, you know, everything, like you wake up in the morning, it's stiff, it's all like, and I refuse the fact that I'm old, you know, like I'm not, that's one thing that I will keep fighting forever, because I want to stay young in my heart at least, and I want this to transfer into my body, but at the same time, you can't deny that some structural parts that have taken a toll. I haven't played as much and at a high level as you have, so that's why it's a frustration for me, because it shouldn't be that way, you know what I mean? Like I had put hours in the gym, but not for at that level, not for that long of a time. But for you at that age to have two hip surgeries is kind of odd. Is that like structural deficiencies that you had, or what was the
procedure? I mean, I was asking this obviously, you know, during the years why it's like this. First time when I went to Barcelona, they kind of told me, you know, you got bad hips, and you know, with the medical checks and everything, that's kind of first time they gave me the injections. The hip, but it didn't bother me that much that time yet. But you know, then you know, my last contract when I went to Munich, I almost didn't pass the medicals because they told me, you know, you got the 70-year-old hips.
Wow.
So it was kind of, you know, the last years was I was struggling. You know, I couldn't move anymore the way I wanted to. It's a lot of compromises, a lot of pain. So a lot of like, you know, sacrifices before the practice so I could even practice. So it was kind of tough. And, you know, when I finally hang up my shoes after the Eurobasket 2022, it was kind of relief, you know.
Yeah.
At the same time, I knew I couldn't play at the level where I wanted to anymore. And then, you know, I didn't have to go through all the pain and all this all the time. And then, but yeah, unfortunate, but you know, I'm really, really happy kind of the medicine went forward, and at least I had great experience with the first surgery, you know, at least next 15, 20 years, I hope I'm going to be okay and able to, you know, again, move without the pain and do the things what I love, playing golf or things like this.
Yeah, that's the quality of life, man. That's, I think at the end of the day, that all boils down to that. When you stop playing, or when you realize that there's other things in life also, there's a second chapter or third chapter, you know, that you have to also be able to play with your kids, and you have to be able to walk around, run around, to do small things pain free. I think that's the day to day, to be in pain. I feel it takes away the quality of life, and that's the most frustrating part. That's why I'm gonna go into rehab also, just to, like, without surgery, just to focus on one thing, you know, and not travel, and just try to clean it up and try to get strong and try to hopefully get the deficiencies out and then move on. So I think it's, health is such a huge part in our life, and we can't neglect it. We all usually recognize it when it's too late.
Yeah, no, 100%. And the worst part for me was, like, I started to realize I didn't want to do some things what I like, because I knew it's, you know, it's going to be painful. So yeah. I said, like, okay, no, I don't want to do it. Like, so then I do something else. And, you know, now, you know, I'm looking forward, you know, after a few months, so I'm able to do things what I love, you know, without the pain. So it's kind of relief, and I really, really hope and looking forward to it.
So let's talk about a couple of things from your past, because I prepared, there's a lot of topics we can talk about, because you have a wide variety of experiences, from player aspect to coaching aspect, now from coaching juniors as well as pros. So I want to start with your playing days, and there's one factor that I find I think is important also from my job, but at the same time also from the perspective of players that were drafted and stashed. What was the process for you as you were going through the draft process? I think 2007 you were drafted, right? So
yes.
And then, you know, for a player to have an understanding of where he belongs, the expectation level for the player of, like, I'm going to come over. I want to come over. You know, I want to play in the NBA. But at the same time, to embrace the European part, embrace the international basketball part, where you have to still develop. You're still young, and you still have to get better. And you have to, like, what was your relationship with the clubs? That, because your rights were passed on from one team to another. What was the relationship you had with the teams, and what was the expectation level? When did it click for you to understand, okay, I have to earn my ways to the league?
Yeah, you know, kind of everything, when I got drafted, everything kind of happened so fast, you know. I didn't have too big of expectations, you know. I did the Nike Hoop Summit, what kind of, you know, opened the doors for me, you know. Then I did the workouts, you know, during that summer. But, you know, then when I got drafted, you know, the plan was, you know, okay, the Portland said, like, okay, you're going to stay in Europe, you know, work on your game, and we're going to bring you over when you are a little bit older. And so the first year I ended up staying in Finland, even if I had a lot of offers all over the Europe, because, you know, I had coach Mihailo Pavicevic, who kind of knew how is the European, you know, basketball scene, and, like, for the young guys, sometimes it's hard to get opportunities or get playing time. So I end up staying in Finland, and I had a good year, big year. But, you know, at the same time, even after that year, it looked like there are no room for me. You know, there were always a conversation. Okay, you can come over. You can go to the, that time I was in D League. You can go there. You know, maybe you will play some games with us. But, you know, I never felt that was kind of the thing what I wanted to do. And so then, you know, I end up going to Italy and start my professional career there with Virtus. And it kind of, you know, then it was every year a grind. Like you said, European basketball, to play at the high level when you are young, it's not easy. And, you know, you have to earn everything and kind of take it year by year.
Hey, short interruption. I just wanted to make sure that you're aware of the B8 Summit that's going to be happening in Vilnius on July 8th. We're going to have podcast-style conversations with some of the best coaches in Europe, strength and conditioning coach, and a former sports director and current NBA scout. We're going to have also a roundtable at the end of it in Lithuanian, which will be translated to English via AI. And at the same time, we're going to have a lot of networking opportunities. So please go to b8summit.com. If you have questions, email us at info@b8summit.com and follow us on all the social media platforms, mostly Instagram and Facebook or LinkedIn. Thanks a lot. Thanks for being here and back to the conversation. What did you live with an expectation to come over to the NBA, or did you kind of put it on the back shelf and not worry about it? Because you know it's hard to be in two places at once, and you have this urge to come over to the NBA, but at the same time you know it's not like you. Oh, there's only so much you can do with it.
Yeah, of course, it was the big dream, big goal, you know, to get there, and you know, I kept working every day, but you know, at the same time, it wasn't the let's say the biggest thing, you know. I just wanted to make it, you know, be play at the highest level. I knew, you know, how much I had to work even to make it in the highest level in Europe and what I have to prove. And it wasn't easy. I remember my first year in Bologna, we had Earl Boykins, Keith Langford, so it was kind of hard to get the playing time for a, you know, 20-year-old Finnish kid. So I really had to kind of earn everything, but it was also at the same time it was great learning process, and I think it was very important for me, really, that year showed me what I have to do to make it at the highest level, and I work like crazy and I improve my game every day.
I remember when you were in Khimki, well, we faced each other a lot of times, and I remember you being very gritty, you know, like you were always very mentally in the moment and say like competitive at least, you know, like you could see that you were very emotionally engaged in every possession. What was your preparation process for the games, for the, like, when did you feel like you matured as a player in terms of coming to the game ready to play and being mentally prepared?
Well, I think I kind of always had that. I always put so much pressure kind of to myself to perform sometimes when I was younger, maybe too much, you know, but that how I always felt, and I always wanted to show everybody what I can do and how I can play, and I followed a lot of basketball. I kind of, sometimes it was hard because there were a lot of players who I followed before, and I said, okay, man, those guys are great, you know, now I have to give everything to you know, succeed. To play successfully against them or have some kind of performance. So it kind of, I always had that chip in my shoulder, and I just wanted to always perform. I don't know if it was good thing or bad thing, but you know, I was just always ready to compete, like you said.
Did you have a routine?
Yeah, I mean, my warm-up routine before the game, I have to always do the same shots, kind of same ball handling drills. I don't know, like now, looking back, I don't know if it makes any sense, you know, kind of. But at the same time, I always felt like in this business or in this world where we are, you know, there are a lot of changes, a lot of, you know, something going on, many things what you can't control. But some of the things you can control, it kind of brings you that security and confidence. And that's how I felt it. But, you know, sometimes it went also maybe over the top, you know. Okay, maybe, you know, I couldn't do this tonight. I can't play well. And in the end, it really didn't matter.
It's kind of, that's the superstition part, right? Like you,
exactly.
You kind of, like,
exactly.
you have to go through all the process to make sure that you didn't skip any steps, and then you have to make sure that you put yourself at ease, and now I can play. But at the reality, you're still the same player.
exactly, and like that's what you realize afterwards. You're like, yeah, that didn't make any sense. But you know, that time it kind of brought you that security and that confidence. Okay, now I'm ready to go. You know, I'm ready to kill.
Yeah. How did you? I assume like the health was the main reason for retiring. But how was the transition process for you when you retired and you stopped playing? You had to kind of prepare yourself mentally ahead of time. Did you kind of after you retired? Did you have to, you know? Did you feel comfortable after you retired, reflecting on your career and then going into a new identity part, you know, like you have to create a new life, basically. You know, everybody says that athletes, basketball players, whoever, they die two deaths, you know, the one of the career and then the natural death. So there's an identity shift after your career finishes as a player. What was it like when you finished it?
I think in my case, it it is easier because I didn't have a choice, you know.
Yeah.
And, you know, I was already, maybe let's say past 3-4 years, I was already struggling, you know, I was preparing for that. I was kind of, you know, working towards the end and just, you know, if, because we lived COVID, you know, they moved the Eurobasket 1 year later. Maybe if the Eurobasket would have been 1 year where it's supposed to be, I think I would have retired then.
Uh-huh.
But, you know, at the same time, you know, I always had the, you know, great love for our national team, so I wanted to finish with them, and I'm grateful I had the opportunity to finish there, and that's why I went through the last, you know, the last summer of kind of getting myself ready and try to be helpful for the team, and but it, like I said, it was kind of easy for me in the end, and kind of relief, so I could move past to it, and I just knew I couldn't do it anymore. No, there was no any enjoyment, you know, with the pain and all the sacrifices, kind of what I had to do day by day.
Yeah, that's what Pocius was also talking about, the same thing, when he was like just living on painkillers basically the last year and a half and 2 years, and it's just at some point you wake up in the morning and you're like, what am I doing? You know, like, it's just kind of, there's no joy. The joy of playing basketball at this level is that you can play and exhaust yourself and compete at the highest level. You feel like you've done everything, and now you can't do everything. You feel like you're letting yourself down, you're letting the team down. You kind of, there is a conflicting kind of value there. You know, like you want to give everything, but you can't 100% engage with your body. So there's you lose a lot of things there.
No, definitely, and like it's mentally really tough. Like during the games, when you have to guard somebody, and you have to guess if he's going right or left to stay in front of him, you know, it doesn't make any sense. And I'm like thinking, oh, you know, okay, reading the scouting reports, okay, this is his, you know, go-to move. He wanna go to the right. So when you're in the game, you try to, you know, use everything, but because you can't get to that stance anymore, you can't move. So you're gonna have to guess. You know, okay, 60% he's gonna go to right, so I'm gonna take that away. But then when he makes that crossover, it looks pretty bad, and you know, it's mentally tough. But you know, those kind of compromises, and it's just, you know, it wasn't, you know, worth it anymore. And you know, I was lucky; I was able to play, you know, highest level in Europe and compete with the yeah. best ones. So that's kind of. But at the same time, it still feels bad, you know, watching some of the guys still. Who I played with or played against, still playing there.
I can't imagine.
that's still bad, you know. Okay, I said, okay, if I would be healthy, you know, I could still do it. But you know, it is what it is, and I'm pretty, you know, pleased with it. And like I said, you know, I got a lot of great things from basketball, and I'm still getting a lot of great things from basketball. So the journey is continuing.
For sure, like that. That's going to make you also a better coach in that aspect, because of the frustration you feel of what you could do and they're not doing, you know, and it's a natural intrinsic emotion that you can relay to your players. Because I remember when I stopped to play for my injuries, I had like a lot of disbalances, and it was, I was like 24, 25 maybe. And all my dreams were shattered, you know. Like I get goosebumps when I talk about it, because it's just like I had to cut it, you know. Like it was just not possible. I had to look for help for a year and a half, and then I see players on the court playing 70%, you know, or messing around, and I lost it. I lost my shit. It was just not possible for me to see what I saw, and them not being 100% engaged, where I want to be 100% engaged, and I can't, you know, and it's there's the frustration factor that you can relate. At some point, I also went over the line, because it was just like too much also for young players to handle of my emotional outburst. But at the same time, it's genuine. It's a sincere emotion that you and the players respect sincerity, you know, like they see if you care, then we have to care. That's basically comes down to that. But I wanted to talk to you also about the Finnish basketball, in terms of, you said like there's a lot of pride that comes into playing for the national team, and in some countries you have to convince players to come all the time. In some countries you don't have to convince players; they all want to come. It's all about the summer. And Germany has something that with the players are all committed, you know, every summer, and it paid dividends at the end. and they still continues to pay dividends. But what was, when you compare, what was Finnish basketball like when you were playing, you know, to coming up? And then obviously Lauri came. That's a big, you know, addition to the whole Finnish basketball culture. But where was it back then? Because also when we played with the national team every summer, the friendly games we played, I saw the development of the basketball culture. It was a different style that was being played, a lot of movement, and it's a different philosophy, but it was also very effective for the team that you guys had. And then it was slowly, Hanna was still playing, I remember, and there was a progress process that was continuing. And now this summer, Lithuania will actually face Finland and it's going to be a very interesting like comparison of like the last 10 to 15 years to now, and then what's the projection? Where is it going? Where is it's growing towards?
Yeah, and like you said, Lithuania was kind of always our big brother, what we were always looking up to. You know, the lot of great players came from there. You know, the coaches back in the days, they used to go to Lithuania to see how you guys, you know, how they do things, you know, what they are doing so well that small country can produce this kind of, you know, basketball. And then of course the big, you know, thank for our rise goes to Henrik Detman. You know, he changed kind of the whole thing in the federation, and then he established the culture, what it needs to be, and the players kind of bought in. And my first years with the national team, we were still in Division B, you know, trying to make it to even to be able to qualify for the Eurobasket. And then, you know, there were some qualifications then when we beat Serbia. There was 1,500 people in the stands. You know, nobody cared. And it, wow. I've seen the both sides, and it's kind of then step by step we made it to the first Eurobasket in Lithuania 2011.
11, yep.
Yeah. And it kind of took from there, and then, you know, we've been part of Eurobaskets. We went to the World Cups now twice, and year by year, I think the system is getting better. The more kids are starting to play the sport, and that's the key. And they, like you said, now they got the idol like Lauri, and you know the basketball is getting bigger and bigger. And 2017, we had the first home Eurobasket in Helsinki. You know, the first group stage, and you know, full gym. And now every time our national team plays, it's like in Lithuania, full gym. You know, wherever you go, practice games, and it's amazing. You know, I've seen the growth of the sport in our country, and you know, I think the future is really, really bright. And you know, now next August in Tampere, it's gonna be next chapter.
Yeah, it's like you say gym. You know, went from 1,500 people to arenas. You know, like it's like 15,000 people, 12,000 people. I remember when we played the friendly game before the World Cup, I believe, in Tampere also, yeah. And it was unreal. It was unreal.
Exactly.
And what did Detman do to impact the system as a whole? I assume it's a fast-growing sport now in Finland, but because in Sweden it is also. I just talked to Mikko Ripinen from Göttingen and from the Swedish national team. So like is this a fast-growing sport in Finland, and what did Detman do to make it a fast-growing sport?
No, I mean the first. I think what he implemented was the federational system, you know. Then he kind of asked the players to really buy in and ask if they are committed for the national team. You know, all the players played for free all the years. You know, we didn't get money, but you know, he made sure that every time all the players came for the national team during the summer, all the, you know, the things, the hotels, the food, the travel kind of was highest level. And it's kind of like, okay, we can't pay you guys, but we take care of you. You know, you can practice during the summer, you know, and if this is something, you know, we want to take the basketball in Finland next level. And, you know, then there's a lot of coaching, you know, education in Finland. You know, I think the coaching is pretty high level. They try to, you know, make sure that all the coaches in young kids, they have some kind of education, and they have, you know, the plan what to do. And so there are a lot of things. And then, of course, you know, the good results with the national team, kind of gave, you know, the more gas. It put more gas in the fire, and the more kids, you know, started to see the sports. Then Lowry came, you know, they, you know, basketball was all over the news, NBA, there and there, you know, back in the days, it was not like this. And now, you know, it's easy for the kids, and they can see it. You can make it out of Finland, and it's really nice to see. And small country, you know, be able to compete in this kind of sport is, you know, like I said, Lithuania was our role model, big brother, and now we are able to compete with them in some of those games, and it's just, you know, great. Great feeling, and it shows, you know, the hard work what the Detman and all Federation players and everybody who were involved did during the years.
Yeah, that's one thing also in Lithuania that they, a long time ago, it's like 15, maybe over 15 years ago, they agreed upon with the Federation that the players will not get paid, but they will be taken care of. Everything is five-star, high quality, and travel is going to be good and easy. And so those things matter, and then the families can come and join in the first part of the preparation, because during the season you spend a lot of time apart from your family, you know, for those 10 months traveling and being on a scheduled life. I think in a national team to balance it out with the family is also very important. And you can see that the commitment in Finland has been, it's been very reliable and consistent over the years. You know, you see the same player rosters. If everybody's healthy, everybody's there. And that's the ground for a good culture to build up on. You know, Germany did it, we did it, you guys did it, and I think Sweden is doing it as well. Like, you can see that the progression and guys are coming. It's not always like in and out, you know, like one foot in, one foot out. But at the same time, there's also still lots of growth left. You know, I'm wondering what the future holds, because there's a lot of shifting pieces in Europe in terms of France is France. That's one thing. Like the democracy, they will.
Germany is also. You look all the young guys coming out of Germany. I'm like, they're gonna be a problem for future.
Yeah.
But you know, like you said, France, Germany. You know, it's. I mean, big countries, a lot of players. It's, of course, it's easier to kind of produce, but it's still, you know, those are definitely, like you said, top two countries for me in Europe.
Yeah.
Right now.
Yeah. Okay, I wanted to share my screen with you for the ProBallers.com segment. Have you heard of ProBallers?
Yes.
Through my podcast, or have you heard?
Exactly. Through your podcast, you know.
So the advertisement works.
It's proven.
And they're the ProBallers.com. They're listening too, so they know this is paying dividends. So let's put in. We're going slowly into the coaching segment. So I'm going to go into the New Zealand Breakers. And the last game that comes up is Illawarra. So I wanted to look at the box score of Illawarra against you. And you'll tell me a little bit about your season, how much you want to tell me about it. Because it was a very up and down roller coaster season from what I was, you know, following. But if you look at Illawarra, there's two things that I would like to ask you. First is, as a coach, what are the most important things for you to look at after the game at the box score? And the second thing, playing against Illawarra, the future champion, which is now they won the championship in a very, very intriguing five-game series in the finals against Melbourne. Were you able to project or see that Illawarra is going to contend for the championship at any stage? Maybe at this game there were signs. What were the signs that Illawarra would be like contending for the championship? So there's two parts of this question.
Let's say from the beginning of the year, I would say no. But then during the year, you know, when you see how hard they were playing every night. And I think that was kind of their biggest strength. They had 10 to 12 guys who really, whenever they stepped on the court, they were playing 100%, full intensity, going for the rebounds, playing for each other. And I think that was kind of their key. Nothing special, nothing kind of, no crazy X's and O's, you know how it is. You know, when you are a player, you think everything is about X's and O's, you know, we can do, but it's, you know, they were just so, you know, hard group to play against. They were the only team we couldn't beat throughout the year. I think everybody else.
Competitive, huh?
Exactly. And all 10, 12 guys, you know, of course they had talent then, but you know, how they crashed the boards and how they were just playing hard all 40 minutes. And it was impressive. And the guys, they told me they were close last year, but you know, they deserve it this year, and I'm happy for them, and they had a great season.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's you can see a 27 assists, 14 offensive rebounds. I mean, I don't know their assist average on the season, but it's something that I can imagine that they're a competitive bunch, and you could tell on video that they don't mind, they do the extra passes, they try to get the best shot available, and then they play hard on defense, and that's like the low-hanging fruit, as Mikko also likes to say. Mikko Ripinen, he's saying it on the podcast, like just low-hanging fruit, doing the basics, basically, you know, and competing and moving forward. What are your basics for the team? If you look at the box score for you, what's the most important things that you look at?
Well, first of all, I always, you know, I think every coach, I hate turnovers. That's kind of one thing when I look then, you know, how was the rebounding? Like you said, the basic things, you know, then the, you know, the also, I believe a lot offensive rebound is a big part of modern basketball, and we put a lot of emphasis there too to try to be active on the glass and then get those extra possessions. And but you know, in the end, it, like I said, it comes down to the personnel, the team you have. You try to put your players in the right positions, and then try to create that culture. Playing hard, playing for each other, and playing with the intensity every night.
Yeah. Let's do one more search. I'm searching you. And this is, if you look at the profile, last five games that you played on Eurobasket, obviously. Now, if we search your teammates, your most frequent teammates, if you had to guess, who was your teammate that you played with the most games?
Teammate who I played most games? Foreigner or Finnish guy?
Foreigner.
Tyrese Rice?
Nope. One more guess.
No idea. Who? I don't know. Tell me.
Sergei Monia, 213
games. Ah, yeah, sure.
You played
with Monia, we were 4 years together.
Yeah. And then the third one was Murinen. That's where you played. Yeah. Honka and the national team.
National team. Yeah. And Mika's father.
Okay, that's the ProBallers segment. Everybody who wants to nerd out on stats, please go to ProBallers.com, the number one statistical platform out there. So, as a coach, when you transfer to be a coach and you made this transition, besides talking about the next generation team that you also coach, but what do you find yourself doing as a coach that used to bother you as a player? Like, you know, like every player has something that Pepe said that, you know, what the coach does, and then you catch yourself now as a coach maybe doing the same things that bothered you initially.
That's a tough question. Like, I don't know. Maybe telling the players same things all over again.
Repeating
things. Yeah. And like, kind of like, as a player, you say, hey, I know it, coach, already. You know, let me, you know, I know it, like, let it go. But, you know, at the same time, you know, I'm a strong believer, you know, building the strong habits, trying to, you know, create that culture through the habits, and so the players are able to play kind of free without hesitating and thinking too much. And
yeah,
that's where you need, you know, to build those habits. And it's kind of, it needs a lot of repetitions and corrections also. And at the same time, as a player, it might sometimes, for me, for example, was annoying. Like I said, okay, can we already move on? You know, I already know this. At the same time, you know, it's also really interesting kind of topic. You know, I did this personality test now in New Zealand, kind of what we used to do also in national team, and how different the players, different kind of players there are. Some of the players already, you know, they get bored after a few reps, and they kind of need all the time some new kind of challenges, and the other players they get confidence from their repetitions, and it's kind of how you can balance those out and not to get the guys bored, but at the same time you know you need all those kind of repetitions and build the time to build those habits.
Yeah. I found myself repeating, and that's one thing as a coach, you also get tired of saying the same thing, but you also, it's the security thing that you want to be able to know, like, okay, I told him several times, like, you know, if he still messes up, like, this is it's more of a insurance kind of thing, you know, like, to making sure that they understand and know. And some players know right away, some players even know without you telling them they should know, and some players will never get it, you know. So there's finding the balance of who to tell. That I remember before the games when I tell the matchups to the players who's guarding who, and then I have to tell the tendencies again, reminding them, and then I could see at the players, like, I know already, like, okay, I will not tell you, like, you know, like, right hand, left hand, pull up or whatever, you know, like this, okay, I will not bother him. With him, I have to talk a little bit more clear, and he will listen, and he wants it, no, again, repeat it, you know, because maybe he's not, some players are visual learners, some people are acoustically, they want it to get repetition, and some people just don't like reading, you know, like, it's hard to absorb all the information when you read. So everybody's different, like you said, and you have to figure out of how to talk to whom, in what way, and how to reach them.
Yeah, definitely. And then, you know, what was kind of, for me, the biggest challenge last year with our team, I was kind of, you know, through the preseason, you work on a lot of things, you kind of build that identity, how you want to play, you know, you have the clear ideas. Then, you know, there's some kind of change, and you have to go totally opposite way or kind of mix some things, and then you don't have time. And, you know, also as a player, I was always thinking, okay, why we don't change this? Why we don't do this, you know? Mm-hmm. But now as a coach, you kind of realize how much you change this, how much it affects to something else. And, you know, as a player, you only think many things through your own eyes. But as a coach, it's totally different. And, you know, you kind of have to understand the balance and try to how you can teach. And a lot of, like, nowadays with the schedule-wise, kind of, is it NBA or EuroLeague or NBL with the schedule, is teaching is a lot of also through the field, or yeah. You know, you don't have the court available, or with the traveling, like us, kind of every week you kind of lose 2-3 days for the traveling, so you don't have time on the court. So it's kind of everything is through the film, and you know how the players learn differently. Some of them, like you said, catch it faster. Some of them, you know, it's really hard to learn just through the film, and it's you know, you always have to think what to change and how much. You know, it is really interesting and hard job.
What was the first, when you started to coach and the next generation team, what were the first things that you felt like you have the biggest learning curve? Like, did you have to absorb as a coach really quickly and learn at a fast pace that you felt like you still were behind a little bit? Because it's a quick process. It's a, like, short window. You got, for 1 week, you come together. You got to bring the team together. You got to teach them of how to play together and put in place defensive philosophy. But what did you feel like as the coach that you had to, was like initially very difficult for you to get the first step in and have a habit of teaching maybe, or drills? What were the biggest challenges for you early on?
No, definitely the teaching part was kind of the, how you can, okay, you can put the set offense, you can say, okay, defensively we want, but how we can teach it the best way so that everybody understand it, you know, how we can get everybody on the same page for sure. And that's kind of the thing, how we can, what is the best way to do it, you know, with limited time. And it's, I think that's one of those things what I still, you know, every day I'm thinking, you know, well, what is the best drills? What is the, you know, is it, is this one, is this one, how we can teach the players this one the best way possible, you know, so they can all learn it. And you know, it's, I think it's constant kind of challenge and thinking how we can, you know, because like I said, not in today's basketball, I think the time is really the enemy, the effort, you know, the coaches, you always have to think where you want to invest. Even you got many things you want to get better at, but you got limited time, so you kind of try to make everything kind of efficient and think what is the best way to do it.
Yeah. And I can imagine that when you coaching, also the transfer from coaching juniors to coaching pros, there is a big jump also, like you have to, obviously as a former high-level professional, you know what they're thinking, so maybe it's easier in some ways because you don't have to teach fundamental things at that much, although you still have to touch on them sometimes, but maybe the transfer from juniors to pros is more X's and O's based or more philosophy based. Where did you feel like the transition from juniors to pros was like the biggest aha moment for you?
Well, yeah, definitely. It's two kind of different worlds. Okay, let's say the next generation was kind of different. Like you said, you had 4 days. You tried to put some kind of things together, both offensively, defensively, and you try to get the guys on the same page and try to make them execute the best way and try to find the chemistry and see kind of the synergies, who can play well together. But I was working at the same time our academy back in Helsinki, where the emphasis was more like the player development. You try to, work there and make the guys better. And then when I transferred to New Zealand, it's kind of everything is about how the team, is going to do. You don't have time to improve players too much, even though I'm a big believer that, every day you can work on some things, because in the end it's about if the players can make shots or not, or they can make right decisions. But at the same time, the time is limited, and you try to there think, what is the best way to play with this team, how we want to play defensively, and then at the same time, like I said, you have limited time. It's really, really, really hard. But like you said, it's good and bad at the same time. When you were player high level, sometimes I feel I take some things still, granted. Like I know for sure they know this, even they don't. And then you have to kind of, you skip some steps, and then you start to hunt you like, okay, now this guy is not lifting, like, we have to repeat this, like, why we did this, but maybe we didn't do it enough, and kind of all the spacing kind of things, and what it, maybe it's automatic for me, for example, when I played many years in Europe, but for some of the guys it's not, and you kind of have to find the balance and not to skip any steps.
That's the in hindsight, you understand and you feel like, I should have said this, we should have ran this drill maybe before practice or after practice, before the game, during practice, to prepare certain things to remind them of the habit, because
exactly
pros have been doing it for years, but then at some point they still need to be reminded just to massage the brain a little bit. I was like, okay, then it's there when the game arrives. How much do you delegate to the staff, and what parts do you delegate to the staff? I remember talking about Detman again, how Detman was giving Lassie some time outs and preparing him basically for being a head coach at some point, where Lassie was drawing up some ATOs, some things that he prepared. And that's a big mentorship part also, for a head coach to mentor their staff and give them some autonomy in certain areas of the work, whether it's practice, whether it's games or, warm-ups, yada yada. Where do you delegate? What parts do you delegate to the staff, and where do you see the importance for them to grow?
No, I mean how I work, especially now. I'm just beginning my career as a coach, and I said I need strong guys around me. I don't need guys who are just there to tell me yes. This is great. I need guys who we can talk, we can challenge why this works, why this doesn't work, what we need to improve, and of course then there's the film work, like last year our assistants were doing, and then before the practice we came to the gym, we planned the practice, and all the assistants, they had their kind of roles, what they run in the practice, was defensively some kind of trail, offensively, or if we had the we wanted to improve our guys, how we had the big guys, we had the wings or guards in one groups, and everybody had their kind of station, and I felt like, you know, at the same time, same like with the team, with the players, with the staff, you really had to have that kind of same chemistry and get along well, and to keep also the staff motivated, you know,
yes.
Have kind of, you know, interesting things to do. And I feel that everybody has to be able to say their own opinions, you know, and then, you know, okay, then we discuss, is it good? Then when we decide, you know, there are no hard feelings, and, you know, then we are all, when we go in front of the players, we have to all be on the same page, and, you know, then it's over. And,
yeah.
You know, this is something how I see the process, and because basketball is so interesting sport. You can play it so many different ways. Everybody got kind of their opinion, you know, depending where are you coming from and which kind of players you have. And I think that's why it's so beautiful sport and makes the sport interesting.
Yeah, the one thing I always keep drilling on, and when I talk to people about staff and handling staff and mentoring, not necessarily, but I talk more about the investment part, because you want to keep the staff engaged at the same time, because you want them to feel what you feel. You want them to feel that they're contributing to the success. You want them to feel invested, because the more they invest, the more they do, the more they feel that they're contributing, the more they feel the wins. You know, the losses hurt even more, because you feel like you've done the work necessary, and it's painful. But at the same time, if you win, it's also glorious and it's fun and you did it together. You know, that's the tribe thing that we all always drill on, that, you know, it's only fun if you do it together. There's no pleasure in having done it alone and, you know, having told everybody that they're not going to feel that they belong to the staff, to the team. You know, they feel like they're servants. You know, you don't want servants. You want people that are at the same level. Like you said, no hard feelings. We're exchanging opinions. We're professionals that we're trying to get a point across and argue for the point that we're trying to make. And then it's on the head coach to make the decision. But we all have a way of relaying the information that we feel, because we all have experienced this in our own ways. We all have a certain angle to look at it. So we also want to express our angle. So you are also, as the head coach, able to make an educated decision. It's not just like on a whim, you know, like, oh, I want to do it like this, you know. So those things, I think, for the staff is very important. The same thing is for the players, that they feel like they are, you know, they're putting the work in, and then they're invested in the whole process, and then the games matter even more, because you've done all the steps. You didn't skip steps. Everybody contributed to it, from assistant coach to strength and conditioning coach to the staff members on the performance staff. Everybody's part of it, and you want them to feel that they are a part of it, you know, and otherwise they will lose motivation at some point to do their best. You know, they only do their best if they are invested.
100%. I totally agree with you. And it's the only way for me how it can work in long term. And, you know, of course, there are going to be some confrontations during the year, you know, we're going to have some disagreements, but it's part of the sport, you know, and everybody, you know, at the same time, like I said, even when I was player, same time, it's same with the staff coaching, you know, it means you care, you know, it means you care, you know, if you are always there just, you know, coming to the work, you say, yes, yeah, okay, I do this, you know, it shows me that you are not fully invested and you don't care enough. But when you are there, you're trying to find solutions. We talk like, okay, I don't think this is a good idea. I think this is a great idea. You know, then we discuss, everybody on the staff are on the same page, and then, you know, we can move forward and do the best for the team. And
yeah.
I think that's the only way to do it. And same, you know, with the players, you know, I think I'm a big believer, you know, collective basketball, you know, where same with the players, if you run, let's say, up and down 4 or 5 times, you don't touch the ball, it's really hard for you to ask to play 100% defense, you know, when, you know, I mean, at the same time, you have to do this highest level if you want to, you know, be able to compete and win, but it's really hard. And it's much easier if you feel you are involved and you get some touches, you feel, you know, the my teammates trust me, the coach trust me, you know, I get some touches, I can be, you know, I feel myself important. And then, you know, then I feel you are ready to give 100% also in the other end and everything for your team.
Yeah, the more invested, the more engaged you are, the more you are competing, and the more contribution you can give. How would you compare the NBL to Europe in terms of game style and level, and in terms of engagement, the players, the styles of players? Because when I was watching their live games and at the same time also on video years ago, now it's kind of, there's a little bit more variety, but years ago there was a lot of similar styles within the NBL, you know, like there's a lot of pass and cut and elbow action and split action, high split action, and there's all, you know, once you learn how to defend certain actions, it becomes repetitive, and then you can see the schemes repeating themselves. How did you see the level of the NBL compared to Europe and the styles that the NBL is playing?
I think it's somewhere between, you know, EuroLeague and then NBA kind of with the style. It's much faster than, you know, EuroLeague, much more paced. But, you know, there are some teams, different kind of style. We were one of the slowest teams in the league, you know. Obviously, we had some stretches we had to play different way and how we wanted to play. But it's an interesting league. For me, I think there's a lot of, like you said, there are some certain actions you can see from many teams. And, you know, you try to work on these and try to create kind of your plan, how you want to defend these kind of actions. But there are a lot of, you know, interesting, you know, some things what I, for example, didn't see too much in Europe. And then there are some great shooters. And then, for example, Chris Golding, you know, it surprised me, like, yeah, which kind of shots he's able to make, and then consistently, you know, which kind of threat he's, mm-hmm, he is. And then, but, you know, it's really, I think it's growing league, really entertaining league. The music is on. That's kind of one of the big surprise for me, you know, how loud the music was during the games. And it was kind of that one thing already, what we talk about, you know, next season, to, you know, during the practices, you know, you have to really boom the music in the practice gym, to teach the players how to communicate in the games, and, you know, because it's different. But also as a coach, you know, it's hard to get your message sometimes on the court, and it's one way to practice, put your music on and try to create the same kind of environment.
Yeah, that's what one thing we did. I remember when before we went to Partizan or Zvezda, when we played, we had preparation and practices, and we brought music in there. Also with the national, before we went on the road, I think it was Kosovo in one window, like, you know, like 8-7 years ago. And we knew it was going to be a small gym, it's going to be loud. And so we, in practice, we turned the music on loud, we turned like their chants on, depending on what they will yell. And then you have to yell in practice. The players have to communicate. You know, there's no autopilot. You have to huddle up.
Over communicate many things.
Yeah. That's a cool. That's a must. That's definitely a good idea. How do you view the Next Star program in at the NBL? What's the contribution aspect there, and how do you feel it's going forward?
I think it's really interesting and great idea. Obviously, you know, now with the NIL money, what they have in states with the college, you know, it's a challenge for this program, you know. But I think it's a proven path, and obviously we had a great experience with Karim this year, and I remember when I saw it first week, I was like, oh, it's gonna be hard. I don't know how we can, you know, use Karim at the same time, because as a coach, you know, you kind of need to give him the opportunities. You want to give him the opportunities. At the same time, you are there competing and trying to win basketball games. And I remember beginning of the year, I was like, okay, let's see how this going to work, how we can use Karim the best possible way, and both defensively, offensively. You want to invest, and you are ready, you know. What is your job to do? And it was an interesting process throughout the year. And then when you know, get to know Karim and how he was working every day, and he had some of the amazing games, what he was able to do when he was 17, it's just, you know, rewarding. And overall, you know, you see those other next stars in the league, and you watch European basketball, you watch EuroLeague, it's so old. You know, it's really hard for the young. Yeah, exactly. Very hard for the young guys to get opportunities, and every team got so much pressure to win and compete, and especially EuroLeague, it's really, you know, a lot of old guys kind of competing against each other. A lot of, you know, it's hard to find some young guys there contributing and getting responsibility young age. But you know, there, you know, the teams know what is the part of the process. They, you know, they are ready to give them the opportunities, make them better, and I think it's great for the young players. And the basketball is high level. You know, they have to really compete every day. It's short season also. Then, you know, end of the season, you have really time to work on your game and your body and recover. But you know, I think it's I like the, you know, the program.
I think it overall, like the NBL, it's very attractive. It's a short season. You know, you can balance up, because 10 months is a long time. You know, and it's stretching out, and then you have this really low period, you know, December, January, February in the European season. You know, and in the NBL, it's like, let's get through this. We go on, like, every game matters because it's a shorter season, and you have to be on your toes right away and make sure that you compete every game. You can't miss any possession because it can flip really quickly.
Exactly. And that's, you know, like you said, for us coming, you know, for me coming from Europe, it was totally, you know, different kind of basketball, interesting, you know. At the same time also, you know, through the practices, like I said, you know, the teaching wise, some of the things, you know, what for us in Europe is normal. For them, it wasn't. And you really have to invest some time to teach them, like, I don't know, spacing kind of rules or habits. But the league is really, I think it's growing. It's, you know, interesting brand of basketball, like, a lot of up and down, high pace, a lot of possessions. You know, the teams are really playing fast paced, and you know, like you said, great finals, interesting five games, and you know, Illawarra in the end was more you know, better team, and they deserve.
Yeah, the biggest difference is there's no relegation, you know, and that's one thing that also there's a different mentality that comes into it. I would actually add a different layer to the league. And maybe it would be different in terms of setup and marketing wise, but in overall, it's like in the G League. Also, there's no relegation. You play, you know, and there's less pressure on the players. There's always pressure on the coaches, but at the same time, there is no repercussions for a bad season. Now you just kind of start over the next season at the same level and hope to do it better. So that's one thing. I think also, I mean, there's just probably not enough teams for them to move up, you know, and to have the finances to support a full season for a new club. So in a sense, it does make sense. There's no relegation, though, because there's only a limited amount of teams that can play in the NBL. But I suppose there's going to be also an expansion at some point. They're thinking about it. So we'll TBD. We'll see what this goes to.
Exactly. Yeah. There have been a lot of talks about, you know, adding teams to the league, and I think next season the league kind of will, they're gonna add a few more games. But like I said, it's growing league, you know, it's a lot of, you know, good players. Some of the, it's gonna be also interesting, like, to see these players after the season, they are able to sign somewhere. A lot of players, let's say, from our team. Parker went to play to finish the season with Vitritas. You know, many players went to Puerto Rico. Some of the other teams went to Germany. You know, Jack White now signed with Bayern. So it's going to be, you know, that's also creates different kind of opportunities for the players. But it's also at the same time something new for me. You know, kind of you finish the season, then the players go to play another season with some other team. You know, is it there locally, you know, New Zealand League or Australian League? And, you know, you try to build some habits, you try to build something, and then, you know, they go to others, they might play totally different, and they come back and they'll say, okay, where we continue? And it's an interesting challenge.
Yeah. How did you have any free time to enjoy New Zealand to an extent, or was it something like so dense, the schedule was so dense that there was no real enjoyment in terms of nature?
In no time, just few times. And that's, you know, we understand because we did that NBA tour also beginning of the year. Yeah, so we were 3 weeks instead. So kind of our schedule was really crazy when we got back. But, you know, I had opportunity to see something, you know, something around Oakland. And then obviously we played seven home games all over New Zealand. So you can kind of a little bit see the other cities. But, you know, mostly what you see is that they are the gyms or their hotels. But, you know, I had opportunity to go to play golf. And it was definitely was one of the nicest golf courses I ever been by the beach.
And which city?
It was 1 hour, 30 minutes from Auckland. There is, I can't, they are Rai, I think it's the name. I heard there are like two courses. I heard the other one is really exclusive, and many NBA players or somebody just traveled there to play round of golf there. And we went to the other one. I got the invitations with the Tom Abercrombie, you know, the old player. And now, you know, he's part of the new ownership also at our club right now. So we went to play a round of golf, and it was amazing. But yeah, beautiful country. And I hope I get a little bit more time, you know, to see a little bit more.
Yeah, that's a cool aspect of having home games all across the nation. You know, it's different because you don't have the same crowd all the time. The cultural aspect of the fan culture, you know, that's in Europe, that's probably normal in every city. But also at the same time, that's the way to grow the sport, to play. That's how we do it with national team also. We used to do it to play in different cities of Lithuania to give everybody a little bit of that team. But with national is different. With the club, to play across the country, it's a little bit more difficult. But at the same time, that's the only way to market yourself probably in a sport that's not prevalent in the country.
Yeah, and there are good and bad sides. Obviously, you ask many players, you ask us coaches, you know, should we just play all the home games in Auckland so we'd have to travel so we can practice more? I think everybody would agree. But, you know, at the same time, like you said, there are the other side, you know, you try to promote the sport. Whole country, we are the only New Zealand, you know, team who plays in the, you know, the league. Everybody else, they're from Australia. So it kind of makes sense. And how I understood right now, the basketball is really growing in New Zealand. You know, it's kind of where Finland basketball used to be, where, let's say, 15 years ago, a lot of kids, you know, are starting to play. Now they got the difficulties with the gyms, where they find the coaches, where they can find more gyms. But, you know, it's interesting. That's how they told me there, like, the sports is growing, and it's great kind of step to be part of. And I also, it's going to be also interesting to see the next steps, what the New Zealand, let's say, as a basketball country, as a federation, gonna take. And there are a lot of potential, and I think that's also part of the plan for the new management of our club to kind of create that path for the younger, you know, generation, to that they see that, you know, all the young guys who are growing up there, that, you know, their first dream is to be part of the Breakers. And that's how it should be, how I see it. Mm-hmm. You know, that you, when you are growing up as a Kiwi player, that's your dream, you know, to put that Breaker jersey on and then be able to represent that club. And I think it's great vision and a lot of work to do, but, you know, it's right thing to do.
You can be the Hendrik Detman of New Zealand.
I don't know about that, but, you know, but definitely, you know, if I want to help, you know, all the possible way and tell, you know, for example, how we did it in Finland and how we look your, you know, Lithuania up and how you guys were doing things, and same there, you know, and it's kind of be able to create the system and use that potential what the sport is bringing.
For sure, yeah. How did you manage the long distance and with the family and being away, the our difference time zones? I had a long distance relationship with my ex-girlfriend. She was living in Australia, I was living in Germany and Lithuania and Europe and everywhere. And basically you live two different lives, you know, going to sleep and waking up, and then vice versa. And then somewhere in between, there's a lot of things that get lost. So I imagine it was difficult. How did you handle it?
Yeah, that definitely was the hardest part of the whole experience and all year, you know. First, you know, everything kind of happened so fast during the summer. And the first plan, obviously, we had our third boy born in April. Lucas was born then, so it was the first plan was that the family will come, you know, after me, maybe in October, you know, and then spend rest of the season there. But then we saw the schedule. We were never in Auckland. Well, my wife was telling me, like, why I should come there with three kids with the baby? Like, for what? You are never there. Like, I say, like, okay, I kind of understand. And it was difficult. Then, you know, I'm really happy they were able to come for 1 month during the Christmas break. And, you know, our oldest son is also in the school. And that's, you know, that's definitely the hardest part in this job. And at the same time, you know, like I was playing 15 years professionally, and now, you know, you are thinking, like, is it fair to put them through this again? And kind of like, those are the things what I'm, you know, challenging and thinking all over again. But at the same time, you know, I'm very lucky to have amazing wife. You know, he kind of understands it, and he knows these kind of opportunities or experiences, they don't come every year. And and now I think for now the second season, the plan is they would be able to come there a little bit more longer time, let's say 3 months, and the kids, you know, the two older sons would go there a little bit school and get that experience, see a little bit, you know, also New Zealand, and, you know, then come back to Finland. But yeah, it's not easy puzzle to solve kind of with this job.
This is already the hardest part if you have a family in one place and have a coaching job, and then if you have a family in two different places, you know, like you're apart, and the time difference. So I can't imagine. It's there's like one hurdle after another that you have to overcome, and plus the disconnect between the time zones is something that is. I think it's great that your family will come over to New Zealand and stay in there a long period. It's great for the kids, I think, to have a different experience at that age, to have a different culture aspect, you know, to experience, see something different, and for them to see a little bit different, you know, world, because New Zealand as a whole is just a different. It's amazing. It's beautiful. I went and traveled to South Island for 12 days. And it's
so you have seen more than me. you have seen all the good parts and all the good things, you know.
Yeah,
I've seen all the airports and arenas and the hotels.
No, I'm lucky. I'm lucky that I do see that airport and the hotel part also. But I'm very lucky with my position that I have the autonomy also to balance it out with travel, and also I don't have a family. So with a family, or, you know, it would be much more difficult. So that's one thing that I'm conflicted with myself. I love the traveling part. I love the independence. I love having the wings to fly and to be, I could work. I can take an Airbnb in Madrid or in Barcelona just to have an airport and to have, you know, see basketball and travel from there, because I don't have, you know, my job requires me to travel and see the kids and see meet people. At the same time, how do I build a family? You know, like there's one thing leads to another, and I'm not willing to give that up. You know, like it has to be somebody that I can do it together with. You know, that kind of amplifies what I do, and that's one thing that. Because I love experiences. I love seeing new things. I love traveling and experiencing culture. I love traveling and seeing new parts of the world that are just like your eyes. Just seeing something for the first time is the most beautiful thing. It's the best thing. Like, you know, when you keep seeing, I was traveling with my girlfriend at the time, and then I travel all the time and she doesn't. And then she's all happy and excited. And I'm like, yeah, it's just, for me, it's just another trip. You know, like it's so you lose the impulse, you lose the appreciation for the travel, because you travel so much. And then when you travel for fun, you kind of like, okay, now I just got another flight where other people are. I can see them in the airport excited. You know, they're on vacation for 1 week. They're just having a good time. And then it's like, okay, it's a different bubble I'm living in.
Yeah. No, I totally understand and totally feel you. You know, there are good and bad sides on everything, and that's kind of the bigger challenge for us, the puzzle, how to solve it. And but like you said, it's good thing it's short season, you know.
Yes.
It's kind of, you know, we go there, short preseason, you know, I can work there and do the really long days in the beginning of preseason, and then with the coaching staff try to get everything ready, and then if they would be able to come there, you know, to enjoy and be part of the experience, also would make everything much more easier. And like you said, it's also like you think, okay, is it fair to do it for the kids? But at the same time, you brought up some good things. You know, they are able to get some new experience. You know, in New Zealand, it's good they speak English, so it's kind of easier to go to school, kind of get that experience and see the world and different cultures.
Many people don't know. I went to elementary school in the U.S. when I was six. You know, like my father signed from Lithuania to play in Germany when I was six, and then my mom and me, after 3 months, we just kind of let's have an experience and go. We had family in Chicago, and then we had family in Michigan, where I spent half a year there going to school, and that changed my trajectory in terms of English language, in terms of perception to the world. And I came back to Germany and studied the rest of my high school, like through high school in Germany. So it gave me a good foundation. What I'm saying, like it's priceless. So I always encourage families without having a family. What do I know? You know?
Yeah, and of course there are, you know, challenges, you know, a lot of hustle, you know, organizing the school, organizing their life there. But, you know, at the same time, like how me and my wife, we see it, you know, that it's worth it. At least, you know, the kids are still in this age, they can do it. Of course, you know, the oldest one is the toughest, you know, how his sports, you know, how my soccer team, how my basketball team, how they're going to do it, how is my school. But, you know, at the same time, they get a lot of, you know, experience and see the world a little bit, and you can always then come back, you know.
For sure. You ready for my ATOs?
I don't know about that, but let's go.
They're not going to be complicated. Very simple. Very simple. I keep it simple. One thing on your bucket list, apart from basketball, that you would like still want to do, whether it's travel, experience, see, enjoy, what's one thing that you still want to do?
Two weeks, all-inclusive golf trip somewhere, you know, resort, some nice golf resort. Can just relax and spend time there, you know. Or that this one or the other one would be, you know, somewhere in Alps to go to ski with the family, or, you know, because those
and
are
with
kind
the new
of
hip.
Thing. Yeah, with the new hips, exactly. And I actually few weeks ago I tried, because my left one was done one year and a half ago, something like this anyway. So it was first time I tried skiing, you know, after the surgery, and it kind of it felt pretty great. So now, you know I can do it. So it's one of those things, you know, when I was playing, I was not able to do it too often. So that's also one of those two, or both.
Okay, yeah, both. You have enough time to do
that.
Yeah. Ask Sharas. You can ask Sharas about the golfing resort. He'll tell you where to go.
I already looked some, you know, in Costa Navarino in Greece. There is some, you know, but, you know, That's definitely some of those things.
Most underrated aspect of coaching?
Underrated. I don't know if it's underrated, but recruiting.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. That's, people don't think about it. People see the X's and O's. They don't think about leads to it. Yeah, for sure. That's a good one. And the most overrated part?
X's and O's.
Very good. One game that still haunts you to today as a player, not as a coach, but as a player, one game that you look back on and you're like, I wish I had that one back.
That's actually pretty easy for me. It was World Cup 2014. We played there. We played Turkey. We were up 3 points in the end. And, you know, I had the ball in my hands, Turkey fouled me, and, you know, I was pretty great free throw shooter all my career, and, you know, and I went to the line, I missed both, and kind of nobody was expecting this, not the coaching staff, not as players. So kind of nobody was saying, okay, let's make a foul, let them shoot the three. So I missed both free throws. They came down, you know, they penetrate to the paint. We went to help, and they hit the three. We went to the overtime and we lost. And it was kind of then we couldn't make it to the next round. We lost actually against New Zealand then in the last game, and we couldn't make it to the next round. And that was kind of, I took it really, really hard. I played well in that tournament, but you know, that moment, and I still remember next season I went to play with Kimki, and I had the same situation in some game, you know, go to the line in the end of the game, two free throws, and it kind of took that one situation that I got over it. So I showed myself that, okay, you know, this is normal. I can make these free throws, and you know, but definitely that still hurts.
Yeah. That's a tough one. I can imagine. That's good that you remembered on later on that you had to how you overcame it. You know.
Yeah.
You prove it to yourself, basically. Best personal investment of the last year.
I don't know. I feel so in debt to my wife, so I don't know if I, you know, the baby kind of was born. The summer was busy. I was with the San Antonio in Summer League. You know, I was all over then New Zealand games. So I don't know. I owe so much to my wife right now.
Yeah.
So I think maybe that's something I, you know, to promise to really invest time with the family and this in the future. I don't know what else to say. How to describe?
For sure. No, that makes total sense. That's a very fair assessment. Two more. Finished coffee.
That's the legend.
Definition of finished coffee. What's the legend there?
Yeah, it is. I think I don't know if you talk with Coach Mario. You know.
Give up my sources.
it came a thing, you know, with the next generation. We kind of have, you know, after the long day or when we had, you know, the early game or after practice, we had this thing, you know, okay, let's go take Finnish coffee. And Mario was like, what is the Finnish coffee? And first time I introduced it when he came to Helsinki to meet me, and I said, let's take Finnish coffee. And he said, like, what is it? I said, yeah, it's let's take coffee and beer. You know, together. So it's, you know, like in overall in life, you need to have the balance. So beer makes you relax, and the coffee, you know, it lifts you up. So you are in perfect balance after. So that's kind of became a thing.
So that's the Finnish yin and yang philosophy.
Exactly.
I guess the last question is the one game that haunts you still. But if you have a favorite failure that you learned from the most, if you take that one game away from the two free throws that you missed in Spain at the World Cup, what would be the favorite failure that you learned the most from and that you feel like you moved on very well from that? Biggest lesson?
I think this maybe goes when I was even younger, you know, when I had these junior games, you know, kind of when I don't remember exact game, but I remember I had bad game, like, and then I wasn't chosen to be part of some junior national team, some kind of thing. I still remember this, and it was kind of turned my head around. I said, like, you know what, like, fuck you all, like, I gotta show you. And I think it was really kind of important kind of failure. And it kind of set the tone for the future with the basketball, you know, all after. But, you know, I think those kind of things, it can kill you, but it can really give you the motivation or the strength to move forward. And, you know, I'm happy it turned out that way. And, you know, basketball gave me a lot. And still, like I said, still keeps going. So I'm really grateful.
Yeah, that's the turning point. That turned the engine on. It's like, I mean, that's the classic example. The Jordan got cut from the high school team. It just turned the engine even more on. And nowadays, I think that kids quit too easily. I think that's a very too easygoing culture. Many things are too easy, and they're not used to fighting through, proving, having grit, having attitude of overcoming, you know. And that's one thing that that's one thing that we all grew up like that. And I think those things sparked us and then gave us more motivation to prove. I wanted to prove everything to my dad that he was, you know, in certain things, one glimpse of an eye was enough for me to like, oh, I'm gonna prove you wrong. I'm gonna prove everybody wrong. And
yeah, there are no patients same way. Like they want everything right now, and it just doesn't work that way, unfortunately, in many cases. And you know, you have to really earn it, you know, and you know, you have to have the patience and the motivation to do it.
For sure. Petri, thank you very much. It was a pleasure talking to you. It was fun. I hope you enjoyed it as well as much as I did.
No, I did. I did. You know, I'm playing here on the bed, so nothing else to do. So it was great, great entertainment for my day. So thank you. Thank you.
Beautiful. All right. Thank you, everybody. Thanks for being here. Click this subscribe, share, like, comment. Thank you for being here. And Petri, I'll see you soon. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
All right. Bye.